Hello and welcome to another episode of This Week in Wealth. I'm Alex Steger and I'm joined by Ian Wenig and Andrew Forsch, CTY RIA editor and deputy editor, respectively. Ian, Andrew, we're doing this virtually. I'm in Florida, you're in New York and Washington, respectively. How's it all going?
Fantastic. I mean, you know,
do you feel lonely in the studio, Ian, by yourself? Don't lie.
It's a lonely world over here.
Very lonely. Is it? It's a bit boring.
You put that in my mouth. I did not say boring.
Okay. Just sad. It looks good at the studio. Andrew, DC, all good?
All good. Less lonely. I got the cat curled up here next to me. So a little bit of company. Yeah, it's all good. We're hanging out.
Excellent. Who's got the worst weather? I'm rocking about 86 degrees and a decent level of humidity.
Yeah, about the same over here. It's a little cloudy though today, overcast.
Good. Well, this is the stuff that people tune in for, so I'm glad we've led with it.
Weather chat. Yeah.
Yeah, right. Let's kick off with the main event, and it's a biggie, so I probably shouldn't have buried this lead. This week is what we call 50 Growers Week. So once a year, CTY RIA puts out, well, for the last 7 years, no less, and we'll come back to that, puts out its annual 50 Growers Across America report. It's a huge piece of work that effectively tracks the fastest growing RIAs across the country. There's a lot more nuance to it than that, and there's certainly a lot more work that goes into it. So before we dive into it, what's in this year's report, some of the lessons we can take from it, why it matters, etc. For the uninitiated, and frankly, you know, this thing comes out once a year, so even the initiated might want to refresh. Ian, Andrew, what is 50 Growers and how do we build it?
So 50 Growers was the brainchild of our erstwhile old citywire.com/RA editor, Alex Rosenberg. And the whole idea is that it's identifying the fastest growing RIAs in every state in the country. And so how do we do that? Well, what we do is we use a company called Fintrix to source SEC Form ADV data for every single RIA in the country that hits the checkbox. Yes, that says they do financial planning. We use a couple of other screens from there. And the idea is that we
screen for independence.
Yes, we screen for independence. So you can't be specifically part of a bank. We screen out TAMPs.
Can't be a hedge fund, obviously. Can't be. Yep.
So the idea is that we look at three main factors. We look at a firm's overall AUM growth. We look at a firm's percentage of AUM growth. And we look at a firm's overall employee growth. And we blend those three into a single number that we call the growth factor. And the idea is that by putting different weights to these, you know, it's almost like the Electoral College, where you're not just rewarding RIAs that have this biggest asset base as is just by growing by large numbers and appreciation. You can find firms that are growing really quickly, whether it's through acquisitions or organic growth or hiring really quickly. And after that, our crack team of reporters, myself, Andrew, Sam Bajarski, Faye Kilburn, Alec Rich, we reach out to all these firms. Some talk to us, they want to be found, others don't. And it's a really cool piece of journalism with a really fun interactive map that I like messing around with during the day.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's a fun project, and it's sort of it provides us an excuse to check in with firms that we're already familiar with, and it gets us in touch with firms that maybe otherwise would have flown under our radar, you know, kind of local, small, kind of Main Street type shops. So some fun and interesting findings every year.
Absolutely. And I think as well, we should say the idea of going state by state is a kind of, it's almost sort of like equal weighting the index, isn't it, a little bit? You know, because I think if you just went for the fastest growing firms across the country, even using our proprietary methodology, it would still obviously sort of net out at probably firms along the coasts, with a few exceptions like the, let's call it the Kansas City anomaly, Chicago, etc. Whereas this way, you get to represent, you know, a much broader set of firms because you pick up, you know, what's going on in the Dakotas, Hawaii's, Alaska, et cetera, et cetera. So I think that's really interesting. Growth. Let's just talk, before we get again into some more details, let's talk a little bit about growth. Why does that matter? You know, at a headline level, the RIA industry is going absolute gangbusters. We know this. We know its percentage is a portion of the wealth market, grows and grows every year. We know that at the upper end these firms could be phenomenally valuable. We talk a lot, we write a lot about the sheer volume of PE and outside capital that's going into to capitalize on that. But yeah, so is it special that firms are growing in?
I mean, I think so. I mean, to your point, real growth, and this is a topic that I've talked about as a guest on other pods, real growth is hard. It's very easy to think that you're a genius with the market up, what, 35% in 2 years. But, that's not actually super sustainable, right? Like, eventually we're going to have some sort of market downturn. But if you're actually adding clients organically, that's something that's market proof in a sense. So, I don't know, the firms that are able to actually grow X market are the ones that are best positioned to are the ones that are best positioned to survive. I mean, I do feel like, not to get too philosophical, I think our economy demands infinite growth in all directions, and it's tough to feed that beast, but some of the firms we found have figured out ways to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think to your point on sort of RIA growth, there was a report, I want to say end of July. Our colleague Alec Rich covered this from, I'll probably mispronounce this name, Pathos Research, but they did some work, didn't they, on actual growth from RIAs and how many really grew beyond what the market appreciated in a given year and things. And I think, it's less, I don't want to go through all the findings of that report. That's not our focus now, but effectively it's sort of less than half, grew beyond what the market might have delivered. And there were some interesting findings again, sort of by no means the majority actually could say they added new clients or added new advisors. Now that's not to say they might not have added more assets from existing clients, but the point being that a lot of firms aren't necessarily doing a lot of growing.
Exactly.
So in terms of our report, now we've done it for 7 years, 7 years now, guys. It's an awfully long time. If you didn't feel old before, you should now. I guess the question coming into this is what's new? Surely you do this report every year. Does it really change? Well, I've got some stats here that I've stolen from our colleague Sam Bojarski, who will be appearing on the pod next week to talk more about this. But we analyzed this report versus all the previous seven. And we found that I'm going to say it's between 30 and 40 new names on the list. It came in at 40, but then when you go through it, some of that's because firms are the same firm, but they've changed their name. But it's somewhere about 35 new names on this list in the 7th year who've never appeared on it in previous years. So I think that's really interesting in and of itself. And then I think as well, the other, let's call it a criticism perhaps, that you could level at this, go, well, surely doesn't this just capture the big firms that are growing via acquisition, that have got deep pockets and could just buy assets and grow that way? But it doesn't just capture those firms. Again, about 30, oh, hang on, no, I've got that wrong. 24 firms on the list are sub $1 billion or 1 billion and below. Last year, that was 34 firms. Okay, so it's down slightly from that. But again, the market's done a lot of work. So if you were even, maybe 2 billion is the threshold that you look at now for what a smaller RIA is. And if you, yeah, and if you expand it out to that, then you get to about 44 firms on the list. So just under about a third. Perhaps something we should emphasize there as well, which we didn't make explicit in our explanation of this report, is that we call it 50 growers because there's 50 states, but actually, in a lot of states, we have up to three firms named. So one as the fastest grower, and then we have two runners up. So I don't know what the total number of firms in this is, but it normally nets out at sort of 140 something, doesn't it? In some states, there is only one grower, but in most states, there are three. So about a third of those firms are sub 2 billion. So it by no means captures just the biggies.
Yeah, well, to your point, I mean, there are some really interesting and diverse ways that smaller firms are growing. At the kind of risk of using anecdotal evidence here, I'll call out one firm which I interviewed, which was Financial Planning Hawaii.
Where are they based? Just out of interest.
Who could possibly guess? Interesting firm. It's a smaller shop, $380, $390 million in client assets. It's a family business. The guy, John Robinson, runs that. He's working with his son. They're based in Honolulu, and the local angle kind of plays strong, and that tends to be the case with a lot of our smaller growers. And he said, they're primarily organic growth, and they've really grown on the back of what he described as strong brand recognition and smart search engine positioning. So the company is called Financial Planning Hawaii. If I'm a investor in Hawaii and I want a local advisor, I might Google Financial Planning Hawaii, right? So it sounds simple, but it really has resulted in a nice kind of organic flywheel for them.
And I think if I have this right, and I'm sort of desperately searching some of my too many spreadsheets that I have open, I think they were a new entrance this year as well, so.
And actually, that's a nice reason to explain something that I wanted to call out that I noticed in doing this. I mean, I think this is the fifth or maybe sixth time that I have worked on this report out of the seven that we've done it. And this was one of the first times that there was an identifiable kind of growth trend that didn't exist last year that really felt central this year. And that was the emergence of AI search.
So I'm glad you brought up the AI thing because that was a common theme that popped up in a lot of my conversations with really big RIAs. So the name that comes to mind to me instantly is Hammerich Berg down in Atlanta, 30 billion, just got backing from TPG's growth unit a couple of years ago, New Mountain Capital. And Thomas Carroll, the CEO, told me that they have a team that is working on building ways to almost SEO, search engine optimization, but for generative AI, for large language models. And he told me, this is on the record, that 31% of their leads in the first quarter of 2026 came from searches for advisors in generative AI. He said they landed a $25 million account just from the head of household in that family using a ChatGPT prompt to look for an advisor. So clearly, as AI gets embedded in more and more wealthy people's day-to-day lives, if you get good positioning with them, that can get you a whole host of leads. It's kind of like, it almost seems like downstream of like when advisors used to really value hits on cable television, because you get 10 to 15 calls after your hit on CNBC was done.
It's so interesting, isn't it? And I think so much of the conversation around how people are going to use AI, obviously, maybe this was a little bit of a product of that software sell-off in February, followed by the, let's call it the Altruist Hazel tool that came out and kind of mirrored that sell-off a week later in the likes of LPL and things, was like, well, hang on, isn't this going to disrupt financial advice? People are just going to go online and do their own asset allocation and try and sort of build their own financial plans. But actually, not necessarily. It's like, well, that's still a starting point. And yes, that can work for the simplified stuff. But to your point, if you've got 25 mil, you're probably not going to trust it to ChatGPT. So if you can be one of the firms that comes up somewhere in some of those models, yeah, absolutely. That's, I mean, what a great example. On the larger firms, let's just sort of talk about that for a moment, Ian. So, yes, there are smaller firms in this, but yeah, there are also, I think there's about 24 firms on the list that are 30 billion and above. And yeah, look, there are some repeat firms on this. I think Sam put together some really interesting work on this, again, stealing his work and frankly, front running some stuff that we're going to talk about next week. But there are a number of repeat firms. Of the firms who have been on it in our seven editions, there are three firms who've been on it all three times. I'm not going to name who they are today. You have to wait for that listener slash reader. And there are seven firms who've been on it six times. And then you get to about 14 firms who've been on it five times out of the seven reports. And there are some big names in there, some names you'd expect. And yeah, as I said before, there are sort of 24 firms above 30 billion who are quite big. And Ian, you were going to talk a little bit more about a couple of those. Now, obviously, we know that the driver for that can be acquisition or indeed recruitment. They've got deep pockets to do those things, but there can be nuance within their growth story too.
Yeah, so I'm going to take this in a little bit of a different angle that you might have been expecting. And that is that a lot of these mega firms are feeling kind of different types of competitive pressures and view different types of firms as direct competitors. So the name that comes to mind for me instantly is Pathstone, located just across Hudson River in Englewood in New Jersey. Now, they have been on this list before. They've been on it, I think, 22, 23. They were a runner up in 2024. And I talked to Matt Fleisig, who's the chief executive of the company, and he was talking about how they have this real defined niche in the ultra high net worth space. And he said that Their average client size for those with a book over 25 million, so this is already ultra high net worth, is $180 million. And so those are the types of families that have historically been served by private banks, you know, the Goldmans of the world or the high-end UBS of the world. And so what Matt was trying to tell me was that for a company like Pathstone to compete is to offer these types of clients experiences and concierge services that the other private banks can't. And so he basically said that the Super Bowl is kind of table stakes, that that's not really differentiated. Anybody can take a client to the Super Bowl. But he was explaining that,
I was
okay,
going to
one of
say
our
no
clients.
one's ever taken me to Super Bowl, but that's yeah, fine. Yeah. Anyone could take a multi-millionaire to the Super Bowl, perhaps should be.
Well, when the Giants make the Super Bowl again, I should have good position in the lottery. So
Ian, if
don't
the
give up
Giants
hope
make a
yet.
Super Bowl again, I should not be anywhere near your list of priorities for people to take. But anyway, I derailed you. You make a good point about Pathstone and sort of how they're
Yes.
attracting these huge, huge clients.
Yes. And so what Matt explained to me was that, okay, how can we use our existing client base and our connections to provide unique client experiences the private banks can't? And so he said, okay, one of our clients has a whole private rangeland that he controls. Let's have a client fly fishing trip there. Let's have a closed door meeting with two US senators. Let's go to a private backcountry ski trip. So setting up these kinds of network, these kinds of experiences that creates a social network for the clients. That's part of the value proposition the NDREA offers, the end networking between clients and building the kind of client community.
That's really interesting. And yeah, I mean, look, let's be sort of clear about it. That's not a huge, that's something that relates to these mega firms. That's something that other mega firms can go, okay, that's a really smart way to grow. That's how we can compete against the private banks because that's our competition. Obviously, that's not something that if you're running a, you know, an incredibly credible sort of, you know, tens, hundreds of millions of dollar sort of client book, you know, obviously that's not something that you can necessarily think about or replicate at an exact level, but yeah, you know, that's the beauty of this report. It's a real cross section of the country. Okay, there was one more firm we were going to talk about, which I think also comes in at the higher end of things. And Andrew, you had this, and that was, I mean, might be one of the biggest firms on the list, certainly one of the biggest firms in the country.
Yeah, this is Edelman Financial Engines, also a repeat honoree. They did make our list last year as well. And they've got a bit of a different growth pipeline, which is they have a massive retirement plan advisory business. Obviously, Edelman, as it is known today, is a product of a merger between Edelman Financial, which is a retail folk, kind of mass affluent focused RIA, and Financial Engines, which was a 401k advisory shop. So they have this enormous pool of retirement plan participants that they want to roll into financial planning relationships. And so that's a kind of a unique thing to their business that obviously smaller RIAs and many large kind of pure play planning focused RIAs don't have. So they've been successful with that. Another thing that I thought was interesting was something that I mean, they've have been acquisitive, but they're far from a roll-up. I mean, a pretty infrequent acquirer, maybe one or two deals a year, so a little bit less on the inorganic side, and they don't do a ton of recruiting, which is something that Chief Executive Ralph Haberle said that he's going to prioritize in the coming months and years. So activating kind of a new growth lever there.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And again, I mean, that's the thing about the report. It isn't distinguishing between inorganic and organic growth. And I advisor recruitment, in my mind, sits somewhere in between, probably leans slightly to the inorganic end of things. I think other people might argue that differently. But yeah, they're all legitimate levers. There are all ways in which you can continue to grow. And the report, yeah, the report doesn't discriminate. It just tries to capture that broad picture. Ian, to your point on Edelman, they have, not sorry, not an Edelman, on Pathstone, they have been in it. This was their fifth appearance, having been in 21, 22, 23, 24. Took a year out, who knows why, back in this year. Edelman actually not in as many times as I had thought, Andrew, but yeah, obviously. And again, look, you know, it's easy to say, well, the big firms can grow because they've got lots of money, but also, you know, the percentage growth they have to achieve to actually, you know, meaningfully move the dial is obviously the bar is higher for that. As to, I think we said when the Giants reach the Super Bowl. I think we should probably call it an if at the moment, Ian. Is that fair?
Well, in my lifetime.
In your lifetime. All right. Well, look, if we're still working together, we'll talk about it on the podcast. Brilliant. Guys, anything else to add on 50 Growers? I mean, like, it's we're going to talk about it a bit more next week, just to tease some of those stories for the listeners. We're going to have various other members of the team on to talk in more detail about that cohort of about 24 sub $1 billion firms and sort of pull some themes, some trends around what those firms have done to grow. We're going to have Sam back on to talk about the repeat winners and, you know, people who've been in all 7 times or 6 times or 5 times, and if there are any sort of commonalities or trends that we can identify there. And we're going to have Alec Rich on to talk about those firms that have made the list this year, but which don't have any outside capital. So those firms who are very much, for if I'm using this phrase correctly, bootstrapping their own journey and their own growth. And that's an interesting story in and of itself because, you know, as alluded to and discussed a lot on this podcast before, there's a lot of money looking to invest in the RIA space, and that money tends to look for firms that are growing. So look, frankly, this list can be a bit of a shopping list for outside investors. So identifying those firms that don't have growth easily, sorry, don't have outside backing, do have growth, clearly. That's an interesting dynamic. So that's to come. But Ian, Andrew, yeah, further thoughts on all your work, or are you just glad to no longer be working on a project that does take months to put together?
I would just say to encourage readers to play around with the interactivity and click on the map, try different states. Again, like to your point, I think firms explicitly have used this as a shopping list before. And we're getting to the point now, the last couple of years, where we're identifying firms that have already been bought on the list.
Yeah, that's a good point as well. Maybe that's another report we can do is, you know, how many firms from our previous lists have subsequently got investment. We can't claim credit for that. We certainly don't get a finder's fee, but it's an interesting bit of work. Andrew.
No, I just I it's a really fun time kind of reporting all of this out. Lots of interesting subjects, great conversations. I will say the copy editing is a difficult piece of the process. So excited to have that part across the line, I'll say.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a lot of data points. There's a lot of numbers. There's a lot of names, and there's a lot to get through. So yeah. Well, no, thank you both very much for all your efforts on it. It's a huge bit of work, and thank you to the rest of the team as well. As I said, we've got more to come on this. If you haven't read the report, it is available at that super snappy URL we talk about all the time, www.citywire.com/REA. Scroll down just beyond the latest news, and you'll see a big banner saying 50 Growers. So click there. We'll put a link for it in the description, obviously, too. But I think that's it from us. So thank you both, and thank you as ever, listener. And we will be back again very soon for another episode of This Week in Wealth.